Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's Thanksgiving week, and the stores are groaning with turkeys, sacks of potatoes, bags of cranberries. Thanksgiving is one of the holidays that pulls Americans into the kitchen. Today, we're doing a little early prep work and looking around at America's cooking habits with a very special crew. This hour on Point, set your oven to roast and roll up your sleeves. We're diving into Thanksgiving week with the staff of America's Test Kitchen. You can join the conversation. Are you excited? Are you stressed by the thought of the Thanksgiving feast? What's on your table this year? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Julia Collin-Davison. She's an on-screen test cook for America's Test Kitchen and senior editor for their books division. They're out with the Complete America's Test Kitchen TV Show Cookbook, which includes every recipe ever featured on the show. She's here with us today with some terrific treats, and we will taste them. Julia, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Well, you've got a giant cookbook
rolling out here. It's a tome.
Everything from 01 to 2010, probably 10 years of recipes off America's Test Kitchen. And we've got a giant holiday right in front of us, and we're going to shuffle these two together. I've got this great cookbook with pages marked right throughout, and we've got a number of dishes spread out on the table here right in front of us that are smelling absolutely terrific.
Yeah, they do smell good.
Isn't it great? It's Monday.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you're not going to, to a restaurant or grandma's house for Thanksgiving, if you're cooking at home and it's Monday, what are you doing today to begin to get ready for this big culinary, in many ways, holiday?
Yeah, the countdown has definitely begun if you're the person in charge of the bird. And hopefully, if you have a frozen turkey, you're in the process of thawing it. Mm-hmm. Now, thawing, say, a small turkey, 12 to 14 pounds, could take about 3 days in the refrigerator. If you have a big bird, something like 20 to 24 pounds, it could take up to 5 days in the refrigerator. So hopefully,
I've definitely had that Thanksgiving morning experience of trying to pry the neck out of it and all that stuff out, and it's still frozen like a block, and you're wondering, what the heck am I ever going to do here?
Yes, that's how I met my husband, actually. He had to hack through a frozen turkey on the show because we needed the giblets.
Oh,
and I was smitten.
Yeah. But, nothing like a man with frozen giblets all over his fingers and a cleaver in the other.
So hopefully your turkey is thawing in the refrigerator. If not, don't panic. Mm-hmm. You can thaw it in hours in a cold water bath, either in the sink or in a bucket. Change the water every half hour. Plan on about 30 minutes per pound, so 6 hours for a 12-pound bird. So if you're not thawing, get on it, but don't panic.
Okay, get that turkey thawing. Mm-hmm. We've got everything but the turkey here today.
Yeah.
That seemed like a little much. And, you know, we also had, just a few days ago, we had on Jonathan Safran Foer, who's got this new book out about, don't eat any, no meat, period. Even turkeys. I'm sure there will be some turkeyless Thanksgivings out there.
Tofurkeys out there, I know.
Yeah, tofurkeys and all the rest. But when it comes to the turkey, the other thing that you all are famous for at America's Test Kitchen is bringing back brining. Everybody brines now, but you guys kind of brought that back. What is it? What's it require? How many days in advance or hours, minutes? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, brining is sort of an old technique, really harkens back to koshering. A brine is simply salt water. And by brining meat, you soak it in the salt water for a period of time. And what happens is the salt actually denatures the protein molecules so that it retains more moisture as it cooks.
Denatures the protein molecules, meaning what?
Oh, well, the salt, there's positive ions and negative ions in both the salt and the meat.
Okay.
And so when the salt gets in there, it restructures the protein molecules.
In such a way as to have them hold the moisture?
It's exactly what happens. It's so that when they sort of straighten out and form a barrier that when they cooked, it holds in moisture. And we've done a lot of testing on this. And the end result is if you roast an unbrined bird, you lose roughly 18% of its weight to moisture. When you brine the bird, you lose only about 7% of its weight in the oven. So.
And that's a difference that you'll taste. You'll feel
yeah.
it. It's in the mouth.
Oh, yeah. It's moist. And obviously, the salt is flavor. So,
how does it mean you've got a very salty turkey coming out the other end?
No. It depends how much salt you put in your brine. We recommend about 1 cup of table salt per gallon of water.
Okay. And how many gallons to do a 15 or 20-pound
bird? Oh, 2 gallons.
Okay.
Table salt, very important. Not kosher salt or any fancy salt
because
they all measure differently. They have different granule sizes, mm-hmm, so they pack in that cup differently.
And does that salty brine seep in right down to the bone? Does it flavor the whole bird?
It does. It goes into all the layers of the meat, especially in a 4 to 6 hour brine, which is a pretty quick one. It's all it takes.
So you can sort of do this the day before, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Not overnight, the night before? But
you can do it overnight and make the brine a little less salty.
Okay.
If you do it 1/2 cup of table salt per gallon, you could go, good 10, 14 hours.
So we're going to presume the turkey in this feast, or the tofurkey, or whatever, whatever people may be substituting for turkey. But the turkey is not on our table. We've got it in mind in our kind of a magical realm of Thanksgiving cooking. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's briny here, and we'll be ready just in the perfect time, for the rest of Thanksgiving. But it's, I mean, the aroma in this studio is absolutely intoxicating. Tell me what else we've got spread out before us, and we'll go one by one here. I see green beans.
Yes.
I see something with nuts here, I see some potato-y. What have we got?
I'm going to pass these spice nuts
right over
to you across the table. Rum-spiced pecan nuts.
Right.
They're so easy to make, and you can buy them, but they're pretty expensive. We tested lots of ways to make spice nuts. A lot of people boil them in water and sugar water or really slather them with butter.
Really just kind of pecans. They're not wet. They're not gooey.
Right.
And they got a little sugar crusting. But is this a side dish during the meal?
It's more of an appetizer
to get ready?
Yeah.
So you're picking on this as you head into the meal.
Yeah, I hope so.
It makes the whole house smell terrific.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just pecans. And what have you done here to make
it's
these
a little
so
rum,
so yummy?
Butter, and sugar, and like about a tablespoon of each.
Mm-hmm.
And you cook it until it sort of becomes a syrup, and you toss the toasted nuts in. And they just get that glaze on them, and then that the spices stick to that glaze. So it's not an over-achingly sweet nut like you can sometimes buy in the supermarket. It's just a really nice balance of nut and spice.
That's absolutely delicious. It gets you in the mood.
It does.
What is the mood that the food ought to set, or the people aim to set when it comes to Thanksgiving? I mean, we know there's that traditional, sort of, you got your turkey and you've got your potato and your stuffing and your gravy, but when you think about the mood of Thanksgiving, what is it you're looking for? Do you really want something jazzy, or do you want just like the old standards, or can you weave the two together?
I think you can successfully weave the two together, although I think most of the table should be pretty classic. I was talking with a friend this weekend who went to someone else's house for Thanksgiving, and she was shocked that they did not have mashed potatoes, but they served wild rice, can you believe it, instead of them. And she thought she was
thrown
pretty
off
liberal.
For the entire year.
Yeah, she thought she was pretty liberal when it came to the Thanksgiving table, but it turned out mashed potatoes were not in question for her. So I think for the most part, you got to have the standard stuff. But in front of you, I just portioned up some mashed sweet potatoes, and these have coconut milk and cilantro and garlic in it.
Hold the thought on those, because that takes us into good and unusual territory. But I want to get a caller right here, 800-423-8255. I'm with Julia Collin-Davidson of America's Test Kitchen looking at Thanksgiving. Katie in Chelmsford, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Katie.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. What do you think?
Well, I was actually wondering, what is the magic formula for trying something new? Should we stick with the standard ingredients and put a special twist, or is there a way to bring a new side dish into the tradition if you're a little more adventurous?
Yeah. And what blends in with that Thanksgiving menu, and what doesn't? Have you tried, Katie, and run up against opposition, or have you been afraid to try?
I've been afraid to try. I usually stick with the usual green beans and mashed potatoes, but, I love all kinds of things, and I was hoping that maybe there was some hope that I could bring something new to the Thanksgiving table.
I think that's a good idea, Katie. I think you have to have the majority of the table be pretty traditional so people aren't thrown off, but I think if you have your mashed potatoes down, try throwing some interesting stuff in there and see what happens.
Into the mashed potatoes themselves?
Oh, sure. Some herbs.
Horror of horrors.
I know.
Like what?
Personally, I wouldn't mess with mashed potatoes. Maybe that was the
wrong example.
Maybe.
Let's try it. What do you do with that? What can you do with mashed potatoes?
Buttermilk mashed potatoes instead of sort of a cream-based might be interesting. Olive
oil. A little
oil.
Tangy in that case.
Tangy with a little sour cream and some scallions. Sort of southern.
Olive oil. oil, the Mediterranean flows
right.
into the Thanksgiving
there's,
table?
There's olive oil mashed potatoes, which are inherently Italian, but there's no butter in them, and they're delicious. And a little more heart healthy, of course, because you're swapping olive oil for the butter. But, you know, there's really only one way to find out, and that's the hard way. You should just make it and see what happens.
As long as you've got some kind of rudder under it. But there are expectations. I mean, I can't think of a meal where people come with firmer, yeah. sort of settled expectations of what generally the framework of the table will be.
It's true. It's true. But most people are pretty loose. I mean, you'd have to be a real stickler for tradition if you weren't going to accept some buttermilk mashed potatoes.
Are most people cooking their own Thanksgiving dinners these days? I was really surprised. I was at the grocery over the weekend at a farmer's market. There were an awful lot of prepared dishes
yeah.
there. Scallop potatoes and you name it, just ready in, you know, the foil pan and ready to go. Buy them now, put them in the freezer, pull them out the Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And you're the, you know, instant hero on Thanksgiving Day. Or maybe not. I don't know. Do people do their own Thanksgiving overwhelmingly?
I hope so. I mean, I know there's a lot of pre-made food out there. It doesn't always live up to the flavor compared to homemade. But, you know, again, this is a bigger ideological question of a pendulum between convenience and sort of the slow food movement. And the pendulum is swinging sort of back and forth. And it's going to be interesting to see sort of where, on a whole, people think about food and convenience versus making a more streamlined, simpler Thanksgiving meal, for example,
well,
and
on this
doing
day
it right.
Of all days, I mean, Americans, I don't know about during the recession, but the trend has been more and more toward eating out, toward buying prepared foods. This is the day when you've got to come up and perform on your own if you're going to try and step up to that.
Yeah, it's true. And I've seen a lot of articles out there right at the moment talking about simplifying Thanksgiving, which I think both is in terms of budgetary issues at the moment, you know, Thanksgiving dinner on a dime, so to speak, but also take the stress away. This is supposed to be fun.
I'm for that. Keep it relaxed. Whatever you're cooking, keep it relaxed. It will be what it will be. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're getting into the kitchen this hour for Thanksgiving week with the staff of America's Test Kitchen, now in its 9th season on public television. Here's the familiar open to the show.
It's America's Test Kitchen. From the test kitchens of Cook's Illustrated Magazine, discover the secrets of America's foremost food testers and tasters. Today on America's Test Kitchen.
Well, today on America's Test Kitchen, On Point Style, with me in the studio is Julia Collin-Davis, and she has got a Thanksgiving feast, or a good portion of one, spread out on the table right here and is ready to take your questions. What do you think? Has the recession changed your menu this year for Thanksgiving? Is it changing the way Americans think about cooking? Joining us right now as well from Sag Harbor in New York is Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, runs the Tasting Lab segment. Jack, thanks a lot for being here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. And Julia has begun to serve up some dishes here. We've been munching on these wonderful pecans. She's also got some potatoes here that do not look like mashed potatoes to me. I think this may be out of your top list. Jack, what have we got here?
You have some mashed sweet potatoes. So there are two things about this dish that I absolutely love. One is you cannot cook sweet potatoes the way you cook regular potatoes. And so if you are making mashed sweet potatoes and you boil them, they become really waterlogged. They're already watery.
Right.
It's got a clever technique of sort of braising the peeled, cubed sweet potatoes in just a small amount of liquid until they fall apart, and then you just mash them right in the pot so there's no draining, and it's a super sort of clever, smart recipe. And then the thing that I love even more about them is what you're braising them in. And in this case, it's kind of Asian flavors with coconut milk and a little garlic and red pepper flakes, and then you finish with some cilantro. And my thinking is that there's so many sweet things on the table, including the sweet potatoes, that adding savory notes with garlic and pepper flakes and coconut milk and cilantro is exactly what you need to do to sort of shake up the Thanksgiving table.
I'm going to go straight to this. This has got a very distinctive, wonderful Thanksgiving color, the flecks, I guess, of cilantro green.
Mm-hmm.
Right through. It's got a kind of festive look to it. And here we go. Julie, is this going to be in addition to my mashed potatoes and stuff?
Yes.
Or I don't have to,
probably
change the whole wardrobe of the table?
No. I'd imagine might want a little bowl of regular mashed potatoes on the table as well. But
That's an entirely different kind of flavor and some real zing at the back of it as well.
Yeah.
Jack, can that sit alongside the traditional stuffing? Or do I have to sort of put on, I don't know, Balinese music and, you know, rock out Pacific here?
I think you can totally sit alongside those traditional dishes. And I'm with Julia. You're going to want to have a regular mashed potato or regular potato dish on the table. But I think sometimes every single dish on the table ends up having a very similar sweet profile, and it's good to mix it up a little bit. And I always think you should have one, maybe two side dishes that are a bit unexpected, because you really can't mess around with the turkey. I mean, the turkey is the turkey and the gravy and the stuffing. So I like to have a little bit of fun with the side dish.
Well, that's peppy. That's definitely got some zing at the end. Garlic-scented mashed sweet potatoes with coconut milk and cilantro. We've got listeners who want to mix it up with us a little bit. Charleston, South Carolina. David, you're on the air.
Hi. Great show. The pecan recipe. Not everybody in Charleston likes sweet, super sweet, goopy pecan. I would substitute the rum and add a little cayenne pepper.
Oh, boy.
To it.
You're going to kick it up with some cayenne pepper? And what else on your Thanksgiving day table, Dave?
Regular mashed potatoes, boring. My wife makes a killer snowy mashed potato that has both sour cream and cream cheese in it. Both reduced fat, of course.
Oh, yes, no doubt not. But certainly make for some smooth eating. I have to say, these pecans have rum, but they're not gooey. But you'd get some cayenne in there, just to give some more zing to it, David.
Yeah, and the last thing is we always have two turkeys. One's relatively regular, and the other one is always the peanut oil deep fried.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're talking Charleston. What, peanut oil deep fried?
Yeah.
That takes some kind of huge gizmo fryer.
Yep.
How do you do it, David?
It takes a large pot and, oil up to a particular temperature, and it actually cooks in about an hour to an hour and a half.
Do you cook it outside?
12-pound turkey. Oh, definitely. Potential fire hazard, so we do it out on the back patio.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Thanksgiving Charleston style.
It sounds good.
Just terrific. David, thanks for that call. I've got another one on the mashed potato front here. Mike in Boston. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great show. And I'm a huge fan of America Test Kitchen, both the recipe books and the magazines.
Nice.
I want to put a plug in for their Make Ahead mashed potatoes.
Yeah, they're good, huh?
Make Ahead.
I have to disagree because I find mashed potatoes extremely stressful.
They are stressful. I agree with you.
But the recipe you guys have is fantastic, and basically you take your russet potatoes, you wash them off, you put them in the microwave for about 12 minutes, then you put them in a hot 450-degree oven, you bake them for another 12 minutes, you scrape out all the potato flesh. You mix that with melted butter and heavy cream. You put more cream on top, and then you can store this in a glass-covered bowl. And about 20 minutes before you're ready to serve, you microwave at medium heat, and they come out, and they are perfect and delicious.
Now, is it fluffy or dense, Mike? I can't tell from the way you describe that recipe.
They're a combination of, the right kind of lumpiness and smoothness. But they taste wonderful.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great recipe because I agree with you. Mashed potatoes, they make my knees shake at the last minute because you have pots of boiling water, you have a food mill, you have, melted butter, and you have, hot milk or hot cream on the side. So you're talking about 4 or 5 pans, and it's a mess, and you have people standing around, and everyone's wanting to eat, and you're wanting to carve the turkey, and of course, mashed potatoes have to be done at the last minute. So that was a real boon for us when we came up with a way to do it the day before, get the mess out of the way.
A little stress reliever right there.
Yep.
Of course, that high wire act has got its own excitement to it as well.
That's
and been done a million times. Jack Bishop, you've got some cornbread that takes us out of the ordinary as well here, maybe with red peppers and chipotle chilies and sausage. What have you got?
It's sort of a Cajun Louisiana-inspired recipe and starts with homemade cornbread and then punches up the flavors. You add some sautéed bell peppers that you sauté along with the onions and the celery. And you add some canned chipotle chilies. Those are the smoked jalapenos that come in that thick tomato vinegary sauce. And then you add some andouille sausage. Mm. And it is spicy and just super flavorful. And, again, sort of you know, if you're going to sort of put this inside of the relatively bland turkey, it's a sort of great contrast with the turkey.
Do you find, Jack, that Americans sort of spread out cuisine-wise regionally at Thanksgiving? Or is there more, you know, diversity there? Or do they, I mean, here, you know, I've never had chili in my stuffing. do people come together, or is there a tendency to get regional?
Well, I think a lot of people do their family traditions, which happen to be regional. But I also think that there's a movement towards, especially these side dishes, of people trying to do something different. And that, yes, they're the things that are grandma's recipes that are going to have to be on the table. But I also see a lot of people trying to do something that may come from another part of the country or another tradition. I mean, the whole sort of deep frying turkey thing, which really comes from the South. And I've got, you know, friends I know who are doing it up in the snow in very cold places up north, trying to replicate that idea. And so I think people are always looking for, you know, what's around the corner that somebody else is doing that I can borrow and do at my table.
Let's get a call from up north, Plainfield, Vermont, and Binta. Binta, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Well, I'm getting a fresh turkey, which is going to be slaughtered tomorrow, and I was thinking about brining, but they said it has to cool down or for 24 hours. So where do I fit in brining between that and roasting?
So you're getting the turkey tomorrow,
Tuesday,
and it has to chill for a day, so you're on Wednesday?
After the kill.
After the kill. Has to chill for 24 hours. So Wednesday, I think you can brine Wednesday afternoon, and then you can pull it out of the brine and let it air dry overnight, which is the best way to get crisp skin.
Is there an optimal duration of time for brining?
Yeah, there's two. There's the fast brine and the slow brine, and both work equally well. It really, whatever fits best into your schedule.
So, and those are fast and slow. How many hours each?
What? The fast brine is 4 to 6 hours. Okay. The slow brine is more like 12 to 14 hours.
And the air dry overnight, what does that do?
If you have time and space to air dry it, pull the turkey out of the brine, rinse it off, pat it dry, put it on a rack, and leave it uncovered in the refrigerator. And what happens is the surface of the turkey skin really dries off so that when you throw it in the oven, it gets insanely crisp.
People have a lot of trepidation about that Thanksgiving turkey because it can go in all different ways. Here's a host of America's Test Kitchen, a little tape of Chris Kimball describing the dread that many feel over tackling the Thanksgiving turkey.
You know, the Thanksgiving bird is just like that maiden aunt who shows up every year at the Thanksgiving table, and you just know she's going to be trouble. I mean, the legs are tough, at least the turkey's legs, all dried out, and her stuffing, well, it's coming out, but you don't want to touch it.
Ooh-wee, that's Thanksgiving turkey stuff. You know, Jack Bishop, it is that, you know, lots of people don't really deal with poultry very much anymore, except in pre-cut bits from the store. This is the day when you actually confront the wholeness of the bird, complete with innards and all the rest. That's become rare in a lot of kitchens.
Yeah, and you know, it's so funny that one of the hardest dishes to make, which is a roast turkey, is the national dish that everybody makes once a year, and that even people who don't cook. I mean, it's so much easier in some ways to cook a beef roast than it is to cook a turkey. You've got, you know, white meat and dark meat that are cooking at different rates. You've got skin, which offers its own challenges, and then you've got this, you know, odd shape where it's thick in some places, thin in other places. So it is not the easiest thing to do, and so any steps you can take beforehand, I mean, Julia's right about the brining, that is sort of like an insurance policy. And so even if you end up overcooking the turkey a little bit, you're not going to end up with that dreaded sawdust texture in the white meat, even if it's slightly overcooked.
We've got more delicious dishes, veggies, right on the table. Let me get one more call on the turkey front. Augusta, Georgia. Dan, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, we decided to do something. Well, I always like to do something different, and I've already gone the deep fry route, and then what do you do with all those gallons of peanut oil at the end?
Right, right.
So we did a beer butt turkey.
Pardon me, sir. Did you say beer butt?
Yes, a beer butt. And it's a little bit misleading, but there's a lot of people out there that do what's called drunken chicken or beer butt chicken, where you take a beer can and sort of stick it up the hind end of a chicken, and you put beer in it, and it steams from the inside. Well, this is a variation that you have to get a big beer can.
I was going to say.
You know, an oil can, they refer to as an
one
oil
those
can.
Those Foster's like Australian, maybe,
yeah,
a big one.
And put in, you fill up halfway with white wine, and then you mix in a lot of other herbs and spices from the garden. You then stick it up the bird's tiny, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And then you stuff the neck full of limes and oranges, and then you seal it over, and then to make it really where if you're three French fries short of a heart attack, you might not want to do this, but put bacon crisscrossed across the top after you seal up the skin, and that helps keep it moist on the outside.
And then you put it in a regular roasting pan and into the oven
or something
else?
Then you got to put it out on the grill, and the heat, and it's best if you got a grill that's got an element right in the center. So what happens is the heat hits that can, and it starts to steam, so it's cooking from the inside and the outside.
So this is the one where you're sort of standing the bird on the can.
Yes, I've seen that.
That's
and actually,
right.
When you open it up, we always tint it. This has taken five tries, and the one we did a test bird, I mean, I always like to do a test because why get the family mad when you screw up the...
Absolutely. Do it on some regular old Saturday. And can you really taste all of this in the
meat? Other thing is we combined it with the brining. And where we had both brown sugar and the salt, and we brined it for 8 hours. It's a 13-pound bird.
Yeah.
Can't get too big because you can't stand it upright in some grills.
That's right.
You have to wire it up.
We invited everybody over, and I had so much fun I had to blog about it, and I shared the recipe with everybody I could. So I combined the brining with the bear butt, and it was probably one of the best turkeys. This is the fifth try. I think I got it right this time.
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds like it could just blast right off of that grill out there in the backyard, Dan, with all that going on. Thank you very much for that. Julia, there's a picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. A bird upright on a can on the grill surrounded by a bunch of guys.
We're going to have we need something for our vegetarians in the crowd here. Quick.
That sounds terrific.
Give us some green beans here. What do you got? Amandine.
Yeah. Now, this is a recipe I developed a long time ago. Skillet green beans. The idea is... last minute, you've fussed over the turkey and the gravy and the mashed potatoes. You need something easy, and this is sort of an easy home run. Just one skillet. You brown some
sliced
butter.
Sliced almonds here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You toast the almonds in the skillet. You add some butter and you brown it. You take that out of the skillet. You throw raw green beans with a little water. You cover it. You let them steam. You take the lid off. You toss everything together. So in a matter of about 10-15 minutes, you have a lot of green beans that are really delicious with brown butter and almonds in just one skillet.
Now, the oil does the cooking, but these are not really oily.
No. There's just a little brown butter for flavor and a little lemon juice, of course, for brightness and a little acidity. But they're easy.
Mm.
They're easy, easy, and they're just a crowd favorite.
No, it's absolutely delicious. It's wonderful. Jack, what's your kind of philosophical advice to people on approaching Thanksgiving Day? You know, people can kind of blanch and get pretty nervous as they look. The numbers are bigger than usual of people. The number of dishes are bigger than usual. Give us some philosophical advice here to get people on the right foot.
A couple of things. One is to make a personal timeline as the cook as what you're going to do, and be realistic about what you can accomplish and also where everything is going to go. I mean, one of the big mistakes people make is that they have five or six dishes that have to go in the oven, which is why putting the turkey out on the grill is also a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Get the turkey out of the oven so that you've got room for pies and side dishes. But sort of make a timeline that includes what's going to go on the stovetop at what time and what's going to go in the oven so that you have a sort of plan is sort of number one thing, and that it's realistic and that you don't really need, the same oven to be at 450 degrees for one recipe and at 300 degrees for another recipe, because that's obviously not going to work out if they're supposed to be cooking at the same time.
I've always found that another piece of advice is you don't have to have 1,000 dishes here. I mean, a half dozen with some nice things on the side, and it's going to be plenty.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing in some articles and magazines nowadays is that a simple Thanksgiving is not only budget-friendly, but it is by far just as festive and just as celebratory to have sort of a classic table with just a few side dishes.
Well, Jack, we are enjoying the look and flavor of your terrific mashed sweet potatoes here. I have not had coconut milk and cilantro on Thanksgiving Day before, but maybe this year. Thanks for bringing this one to us. Jack, thanks for joining us there from Sag Harbor today.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are getting into the kitchen for Thanksgiving week today
With the staff of America's Test Kitchen, we have got beautiful dishes spread out right across the table. The studio is full of the most wonderful aroma. Julia Collin Davison is with me, senior editor for the books division there, on-screen test cook for America's Test Kitchen. They're out with their huge new cookbook, 10 years of the best of the best, the complete America's Test Kitchen TV show cookbook. I guess that makes very plain exactly what this is.
Yep.
We're looking squarely at Thanksgiving today because it is a big day when a lot of Americans enjoy cooking, certainly enjoy eating. And you know, a couple days advance preparation and thinking go a long way when it comes to Thanksgiving. We've got green beans, amandine, and spiced pecans with rum glaze, and these wonderful garlic, coconut,
mashed sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm.
We've got some dessert coming up here, so you can get outside the bounds, but people like to stay in there, too. Here from Facebook, Julia.
Yep.
Here's Jed. He says, as much as I know it will horrify Christopher Kimball, and I'm a big fan, I'll be making the green bean and French's onion bits casserole. I know. I don't care. Grandma made it. Even a diehard foodie has to make exceptions. I mean, this is one of those days of right back to the heart of the canned up 1950s food.
Yep.
So sometimes you want a little bit of that on the side,
too. I agree. The recipe's on the back of the can. And my husband actually asked if we could make that for our holiday gathering in December. I worry that it's not going to live up to his memory of how good it tastes. But there is something really comforting about those old classics.
And then here's Keith from Facebook as well. He wants to take us all the way back. He says, the first Thanksgiving feast probably consisted of dishes such as seethed, as in boiled, lobster. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That would be roasted goose, boiled turkey, fricassee of coney. Don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either.
Pudding of Indian cornmeal, seethed, I guess, boiled cod, roasted duck, stewed pumpkin, roasted venison, savory pudding of hominy, fruit and Holland cheese. Well, I don't know if he's right or wrong.
Sounds good.
Makes me want to be back there. Sue in Melrose, Massachusetts. Sue, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
You're
I love your
welcome.
Show.
Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to put in my two cents.
Yeah.
To the advice that you should plan ahead, I actually started planning a couple of weeks ago. I'm in a local food co-op.
Okay.
Of locally raised, organically grown food. So as my late harvesting started coming in, I started deciding what I was going to use for Thanksgiving.
What have you still been bringing in, Sue?
We just got 50 pounds of potatoes.
Ooh.
We've gotten onions, cranberries, turnips, apples, lots of apples.
And you've got the satisfaction of seeing them come straight from the earth. That's pretty good. Are you the main Thanksgiving cook in your house, or the husband, or shared, or what?
Well, my husband and I both cook, but my husband's come to the realization that only one of us can be in the kitchen.
Different styles or different menus?
We have two different menus. We have a kids menu and an adult menu. We're having 20 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to have two seatings.
Yeah.
So, you know, the kids menu is going to be pretty basic. We also have multiple food allergies to deal with.
That can make the complexity spike up in a hurry.
Yeah.
Give us some of your dishes at the adult table. We can kind of imagine the kids, unless you're going to surprise us. But what have you got that's special?
We don't surprise the kids.
Okay.
Grown-ups, we're going to have a butternut squash and apple soup.
Sounds
and
great.
Again, the squash is coming from our local co-op as well as the apples. Mm. We're going to have turkey roasted with fruits and vegetables.
Mm.
A cornbread stuffing made with homemade cornbread that I actually have to start tonight.
Yes. Got to cook it and let it dry out.
Yes. Reminiscent of what your previous caller said about the southern with the peppers and things.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one of our twists. We're going to do mashed potatoes and turnips and fresh cranberry sauce.
No wonder you've got 20 people at your house. It makes a lot of sense with a recipe, with a menu like that.
Yeah. So, and my husband's going to make homemade sourdough bread.
Sounds
your
pretty great.
Busy.
Yeah.
I'm actually, it's funny because I'm more freaked out about cleaning my house than I am about the actual cooking.
Yeah,
I know that feeling.
Yeah, there's the Monday challenge and the Tuesday and Wednesday. And when the kitchen starts, at some point I just surrender on the cleaning front.
Yep.
It just becomes mayhem. Sue, thank you and good luck. One more right here, Brian in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Brian, you're on the air.
How are you?
Very well. What are you cooking?
Well, I just want to tell people that sometimes messing with tradition pays off.
Okay.
Several years ago, I messed with the mashed potato tradition, and what I came up with was half mashed potatoes and half yuca, with roasted garlic.
Ooh.
And that is now our tradition in our house. I can't get away with not making that.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yuca. Now, describe a yuca for us.
Yuca is a root vegetable that's eaten a lot in the Caribbean and South America. The Brazilians tend to fry it. Puerto Ricans tend to boil it.
Is it sort of a plantain, that kind of?
No. It's a root vegetable. It's a long, it's hard to describe.
Oh, the tube. Okay, yes, I know that. That's right. Okay.
But if you soak it in hot water for a few minutes, you can just peel that right off.
And does it get, what kind of a mash does it give you? Is it thicker or lighter or what?
Well, the texture is very similar to the potato when it's boiled. There's a fiber in the middle that you have to remove, but you can mash it just like you can a potato. So when it's all mashed together, you don't really feel much textural difference. It might have a little bit more texture than the potato.
But it has kind of a sweet flavor, right?
And it adds so much to the dish.
Sounds terrific. Thank you very much, Brian. We've got to get to this last dish because I have to eat some of it. I just can't wait. And you've got
it's an enormous skillet,
this beautiful brown crust. I see apples peeking out from underneath here, but it's not pie. What is this?
Well, it's our skillet apple pie, also known as pan dowdy. The idea is it is one crust, and the crust is on the top, and the apples, apples have serious flavor. Because we're using a skillet, it gives us the opportunity to cook them down on top of the stove rather than in the oven. And so you can layer in there some maple syrup and some apple cider, which, of course, really enhance that apple flavor.
Now, dowdy, what is that? Where's that come from? The cider's in there for sure.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Very tangy.
Dowdy, this harkens back to all those fruit desserts, fruits, cobblers, Betty's, all that stuff. A dowdy, it has the crust on top, and normally you would break up the crust and press it down into the liquid. But really,
sort of colonial era.
Yeah, but really that's not that tasty, we found out. You know, soggy crust only gets you so far. So our version of it really doesn't press on the crust too much.
You're not sort of chopping the crust down into the apples, but letting it sit on top. It's very crusty. It's got a real nice glazed. I see sugar sprinkled all across the top here as well.
Of course, just a little.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And this is maybe a little easier than a pie, though. You're not pinching the crust and having to shape it just so all the time.
I think so. And the other thing is, again, the skillet, you can cook the apples ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And different apples, different ages of apple or types of apple, release different amounts of liquid. So you can really see what you're dealing with and thicken it up appropriately before you slap the crust on the top.
Do you know what kind of apple this is, by any chance, Julie?
I think this is probably a combination of apples, sweet apples. I think it's probably a little bit of Macintosh and maybe a few Golden Delicious.
Well, that's pretty darn good. And this would definitely have the color and the kind of Thanksgiving dessert, that sort of caramel color, would you want to see, the crustiness.
But homey and simple. Again,
absolutely.
The idea, take the stress off, take the pressure off a little bit. The flavor's there, and it's like apple pie, but it's a lot easier.
This isn't Paris. This is an American holiday, and this is Thanksgiving. Al, Portsmouth, Virginia, you're on the air, Al.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to have you. Forgive me while I eat some more of my apple dowdy. Give us a story, Al.
Yeah, I lived in Germany, Frankfurt, Germany, in the early 70s, and we thought it would be a neat idea to have a local couple over to share in an American Thanksgiving. This was about the time that those plastic cooking bags first came out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you sort of throw everything in and then let it simmer, let it cook?
Right. Mm-hmm. And my idea was, well, heck, if it makes these other things tender, it should really tenderize the turkey.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Turkey in a bag.
And it did, because what I ended up with was a skeleton of a turkey.
Oh, no.
With a bunch of really tender meat laying around it.
That doesn't look so great on a platter, though, Al.
Not at all. I mean, you don't carve it. You sort of just spoon it.
Oh, boy. So has that become your tradition, or did you leave that one in Frankfurt?
I left it in Frankfurt, and I apologize to my guests because I said, really, I know it doesn't look like these things you see on a magazine cover.
Not that year. Not that place.
It probably tasted pretty good, though, huh?
Yeah.
It tasted great. It just didn't look like anything.
Yeah.
That's great. So you're introducing some Germans and some Chileans into Thanksgiving tradition, and what you show them is what? goo in a bag. Goo and bones in a bag.
American turkey in a bag.
Yeah. Al, thanks for the story. Thank you very much. Hester in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Hester, you're on.
Good to talk to you.
I love
the show, and I want to say I maybe bought the very first Cooked Illustrated issue that came out and have been saving them ever since and absolutely love the whole concept.
That's great. And have you picked it up and worked out of it? What are you making for Thanksgiving?
Well, I come from a big family from the South, and we have a lot of very important things that you can't do without, but this is one that I'm not sure a lot of people in other parts of the country would know, and it's not for the actual, well, it is somewhat for Thanksgiving Day, but it is a making, and I started it last night, I finished it today,
okay.
A great big pot of what we call Brunswick stew.
With squirrel?
Pardon me?
Does it have squirrel in it?
No,
I think traditional Brunswick stew, I think, had squirrel and rabbit.
Well, I can tell you from Eastern North Carolina, this was my grandmother's cook's recipe, and it was whatever they hunted and brought in. It could have been venison, squirrels, rabbits, anything.
What's in yours this year, Hester? What have you?
This is, we've made it a little bit more sophisticated over the years, and what we do is you take a whole chicken, a couple of chicken breasts that are extra, and a big slab of pork spare ribs, and you simmer them for hours until the meat's falling off the bone. You pick all the meat off the next day after the liquid is cooled, and then you add to the meat, you have diced potato or grated potato, lima beans, corn, some small chopped tomato, and then the base is V8 juice.
Right.
And a little bit more of that broth that you cooked the meat in the night before.
Sounds good.
And then the seasonings, it's pretty spicy. There's a lot of, there's garlic salt, regular salt, coarse black pepper, Tabasco, Worcestershire sauce, and just a little bit of sugar to sort of balance all those spicy things out.
And do you still get out the rifle and do some hunting for this? So that's all history now, Hester.
Well, deer wander through our yard periodically, so I guess if I was sneaky, I could go out there and nab one, but it's against the law to shoot them in our neighborhood.
Right. And will you put this on the table alongside the turkey, or is this your day before, day after tradition, or is it the main event?
No, this is actually why I wanted to call in, is because we have usually have about 20 to 22 people for Thanksgiving, and it's such an ordeal to put the meal on that it's just great to have this big pot of Brunswick stew. The longer it stays in the refrigerator, the better it is. And when you have all these teenagers and adults and people walking through the kitchen on Wednesday and then Friday after Thanksgiving, even Saturday, and they say, I'm hungry, then you say, go get some Brunswick stew.
Dish it up.
Here's some ham biscuits,
yeah.
And leave the kitchen. I don't want to see you.
Hester, we've got it, and thank you very much for your call. You know, Julia, in all of these calls, you sense something that is what I so value about Thanksgiving and the days around it, which is it's when cooking really comes to the fore. Everyone expects it. Everyone's ready to kind of luxuriate in it, take the extra time to do it so you're not rushing through what can we put together in 5 minutes for dinner kind of thing.
Right.
That's the joy of it.
Yeah, this is the fun part. This is the fun part. Having people, you know, come to your house and making food. I mean, this is not your Tuesday night supper, let's get it on the table before homework starts. This is all day feast, and where you really sit around and enjoy company and enjoy the food. So yeah, I think, yeah, I get that flavor from people calling in too, and that is the best part of Thanksgiving.
And of course, you've also got the advantage of some collective wisdom because people get together and somebody knows how to do the gravy just right and somebody else may be a whiz at the potatoes. You're not just out on your own on this holiday if you're lucky.
And yeah.
We've got a lot of callers today with 20 people, 22 people.
That's a lot of folks. That's a lot of collective memory
if you've got people of a certain age and experience there.
Yeah, and hopefully people don't hold too dear to their making the meal, and they can really delegate and let people's experiences shine through, because that really adds to the fun.
Oh, it is. No question about it. Beth in Earhart, South Carolina. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I know we're getting close to time, so even though I grew up in Charleston, my folks originally grew up in the country in Colton County, South Carolina, and our tradition mainly is to have cornbread dressing. We don't call it stuffing here,
cornbread dressing.
But then when we moved to Charleston, my brother got a taste for the oysters, and so we also have a pan of regular cornbread dressing, and then we also have a pan of oyster cornbread dressing. And that gives a little of the Charleston flavor, the South Carolina flavor to it.
And I expect your table has come to expect that. Without the oysters, it just wouldn't be complete.
Oh, my brother, in fact, he undertakes making that one himself. He has to have that. and he's a good cook. So, and another pointer that I haven't heard anyone else mention is that another thing we do is keep stew on the back burner. We keep some chicken parts stewing. We have the chicken, and we buy extra giblets for the chicken to put in the dressing and to put in the gravy, and and then we can have some chicken cut up in the dressing and gravy, and so then you can use the broth from that as well, and it's richer maybe than what you can buy on the shelf.
So right off the back of the stovetop, you've got it always there, ready to bring into other dishes. It sounds just great, Beth, and thanks very much for your call. Wow, this has been a great warm-up, and it's here.
Yeah,
it's only Monday,
I
and
know.
I'm already just ready to start peeling potatoes and diving in.
Yeah.
Turkey's on the way for those who are going to have them, and again, it's interesting, you know, after talking with Jonathan Safran Foer, a lot of people said to me, well, Tom, are you going to do a turkey? You're not going to do a turkey?
Are you going to do a turkey?
Well, how do you have family come home for the holiday and say, well, here's a, I'm sure you can, I'm sure many people may not. I'm trying to get one that was raised in the most humane possible way, so
yeah.
I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
But the fact is, millions and millions will be served, and it's hard for everybody to figure out some, you know, perfect way these days, but it is interesting that people are thinking about it.
Yep.
They want the flow of ingredients coming to their table to be, what, as humane and kind of earth-friendly as possible. Talk about being satisfied over the meal. That brings a very special kind of satisfaction, too.
And I think, you know, the whole idea of nitrates and chemicals and how animals are raised is really on the forefront of how people think about food. And now that there's that movie out, Food Inc., of course, which is really mainstream and helping people think about how food gets to the table. And it's an exciting time. It's interesting to see over the next 5 years how people stop buying prepared foods and really start thinking about where their food comes from and make it themselves.
Well, here's to health and good cooking and good family times, with big thanks to you, Julia Collin Davison from America's Test Kitchen. The new cookbook is The Complete America's Test Kitchen TV Show Cookbook. You can see all the recipes we've talked about here today at our website, onpointradio.org. Good luck with all your preparations, and hope everybody has just a great Thanksgiving. Julia, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.